don't want to see you coming back in here with fucking junkies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained junkies.
Look at anybody going sitting up a pint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the so-called Weaker Podcast, the Falls Lilies Weekly GEA Show. Almost forgot the name of the podcast there for a second, lads. Joined, as always, Gavin Cooney.
How are you?
Mark Farrelly.
How's it going?
Third banana.
I don't like to refer to a banana as a banana, and especially as a third one.
No, you never want to be the third banana, if anything else. But the lads are very welcome, as always, and as are you, the listener. We're delighted to be still with you here, right bang in the middle of the so-called club month, as we kind of, you know, search deep for stories in the GAA world as no inter-county football or hurling is taking place, despite the beautiful weather outside.
Yeah.
I really missed, actually. I was watching the Premier League, God help me, on Sunday, and I went to put on, I just automatically kind of went to TG Carter. It was sunny outside. It was like an automatic thing, and they were showing a film. Which name I can't remember.
It was definitely a Western, was it?
Yeah, it was a Western film. And yeah, it was just devastating, I have to say. And I went back to Newcastle and Arsenal and just felt really bad about my life. Tweeted about it and got a lot of angry tweets going, get out to a game! You gotta get to a game!
What you need to do.
But it was my first day at home in like 3 weeks. I wanted to be at home.
He's defended himself against inaudible accusations there, so I don't know what he...
Get out to a game!
If you really want big numbers, what you should do is praise TG Carr's coverage.
Oh yeah.
Big
oh, yeah.
Twitter numbers comes from...
I've heard that.
How many
for
followers
do
you get off the back of that?
I got a lot. I also got a retweet from one Jerry Adams and Buff Egan.
Well. High praise.
Two of Ireland's biggest cult heroes.
Republican here in years.
Yeah, so that's, I might try that actually next week. Well, see, they don't have any games at the moment, so it's hard to praise them.
Games.
There is loads of club championships games. They're not live on TV at the moment on TG Carter, although Ayr actually announced that they're going to be showing, I think, two Limerick hurling championship games next week, and then the following week they're going to show two Dublin senior football championship games, which is great. That's like brilliant this time of year.
I think there were someone TG Carter as well, weren't there?
Yeah.
There might have been. They weren't on Sunday afternoon. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. But there's lots of club games to talk about. But we've got a good show this week, actually, because Gavin has been out and about hobnobbing it with the hobnobs. It was in Crow Park yesterday to meet the new Director General of the GEA. I won't go for the Irish version, which is
Ard Shuarrachóir.
Is Ard Shuarrachóir? Wasn't Ard Scrutahor the head examiner?
Yeah, as far as I know.
The Leaving Cert.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, yeah, very the invigilator.
Subtle difference.
Yeah. So we'll be hearing some of your conversation with Tom Ryan, the new DG of the GEA. A little bit later on, and also Mark's get this week. We're delighted. I'm really looking forward to this interview. We've got Shane Mangan, who is a lecturer and researcher at the Gaelic Sports Research Centre, and is also a performance analyst for London GAA. Mark, what are we going to talk to Shane Mangan about?
Yeah, well, a lot of people actually might know some of Shane's work from what he did a few years ago, and actually Gavin, you reported on it at the time, was he analysed the amount of funding that players per player that was going to each county in the GAA, and the fact that Dublin was getting so much, and there was an awful lot of chat about that at the time. But he also does an awful lot of work, obviously, in terms of performance analysis, stats, GPS monitoring, all this kind of stuff. He works, like we're saying, in the GAA, the Gaelic Research Centre, has worked with London, is working with London at the moment, has worked with Ballyboden St Enda's as well. So we're just going to try and, I suppose, demythicise the attitude towards stats that some people have in the GAA still. You know, it's the typical, the Pat Pallan quote of, you know, paralysis by analysis, statisticians, all that.
Stats didn't put the ball over the bar.
Yeah, and actually learn a bit about how, it's really interesting. I might have actually just said I was asking you yesterday, what do you think of anything in GPS? And all you think about, you're saying, it was just like,
something to throw at.
I think I said average speed and distance covered was the only thing that I could think of really quickly off the top of my head, and the list is endless. Really.
I was actually listening to Shane and another colleague who's I can't remember his second name now. He's also called Shane, but they were on a podcast, the Pacey Performance Podcast, I think it's called, and they were talking about how they're getting to the end of, like, they're nearly past GPS at this stage. It's like, oh yeah, we've got all the sort of, you know, in general terms, like the learnings we can from it. and they're moving on. But we'll chat about that more in depth.
I have to say, no All-Ireland celebration can ever look cool when lads are walking around in the GPS sports bras. It's just, it definitely, like, you know, it takes away from the kind of the celebrations a little bit. But other than that, I'm sure it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But we have to take the rough with the smooth here. We have to be honest.
Exactly.
Weigh things up honestly here.
The mention of that has plucked some horrific incident from the recesses of my mind of Aidan O'Shea having his nipple twisted against, I think it was Fermanagh. I'm not sure. Do you remember that? Like this last year, the year
Vaguely.
Before? And I think the GPS sports bra provided sufficient protection.
That's good to know. Yeah. So geez, another win for GPS there, yeah. I would say. That's 2-1.
That tells you something about GPS, but more about my weird, twisted mind.
Yeah, and not Aidan O'Shea's twisted nipple, luckily. So we'll have that. We'll have Tom Ryan. And Marka is going to bring us his usual bits and pieces of news now in a second. But before we get to that, we gave you last week, now this is somber tones, that's the our so-called weaker hurling team of the National League.
Yes.
And we had a mistake. It wasn't our fault. For the third week in a row, we're going to throw Morris under the bus here. Morris Brosnan picked this team. And he was at pains to make sure we pointed out that we picked Mayo captain Cottle Freeman at 11 in that team, whereas actually we should have picked number 11, Kenny Freeney from Mayo, he's the one who actually got the 11 points in that crucial game, and not Cottle Freeman. So, sorry, Cottle. You did a great job captaining Mayo, doing a great interview with us on balls.ie, which you can read right now if you want to go to it. Captaining Mayo to their first 2B title. You're probably going to win the Christy Ring Cup. Well done and all that, but you didn't get into our so-called weaker team of the year. That's Kenny Freeney. If you go and check the actual post that we did on site about that team, you'll see his name in there and not Cottle Freeman. So, just a very important clarification that we needed to make. Sorry, Cottle.
Tough luck, Carl.
And yeah. Kenny. Sorry, Kenny as well.
Yeah, yeah. Your 11 points were credited to Kenny. Someone else there.
Kenny's so made it.
It's basically kind of like that whole Oscars thing, you know, with like Moonlight La La Land. Yeah, so Cottle Freeman is La La Land. And just remember that when you're watching the Christy Ring Cup this year. Right, Mark, take us around the so-called club month.
Nobody counted us in all year. The media.
Where did this ferocious determination out there today come from?
The media!
So-called club month. Well, I mean, we're going to keep on the theme of somber news. Of course, this week we all said goodbye to the one and only Big Tom McBride.
Now, can I interrupt here and say that I will hold my hand up and say I did not know who Big Tom was. And when we got the Slack message yesterday morning to say that Big Tom was dead, I assumed he was a wrestler.
Can we turn off? Can you ever turn off?
Yeah, I might just mute him for a minute here. Yeah,
we may play out with Big Tom. Actually, we're just making a production request. Yeah.
Production decision live on air. I hope that I remember this when we come to edit. But I've heard of a lot of people not having heard of Big Tom, and there's a part of me that just thinks like it's something to do with the fact that Gavin went to Trinity.
Yeah, there's a rural urban divide as well.
So even though he's technically rural, you know, he became really urban.
Rural in the sense that I'm rural.
Ah, yeah, you became
you're
urban.
From a town, though, you know.
No, I'm from outside of town. Ten minutes outside of town.
That's all right. That's
10 minute drive.
But you never went to see the show bands or anything.
You're not from
I wasn't born in the 1940s.
I've never seen the show band in my life. Now I have to.
Funnily enough, as well, he's asked me about Big Tom as well, and I was there. Oh, these all those songs. You're going out the same way you came in, and Horse It Into You, Cynthia. And then I discovered Horses Into Cynthia wasn't him. It was Colin Gallen or whatever. I don't know how to pronounce it. But anyway.
So I'm not going to lie. I mainly know Big Tom from Reeling the Years.
Yeah, I only know one Big Tom song. And it was his most recent. Or one of his most recent anyway. So we all know Big Tom, but we don't really know him that well. But anyway.
Bring it back to the so-called weaker counties here.
So-called weaker clubs around the so-called club month, whatever this is called, segment's called this week, around the so-called Big Tom. Big Tom, where did he get his name?
He was quite small, as it turned out.
Actually, turns out Big Tom got his name from GAA. He used to play for Orem Sarsfields up beside Castle Blaney in Monaghan. And his manager at the time, John McCormick, christened him Big Tom. So that was just a little tidbit. Because he was very big.
No, it was because
in the middle.
No, Big Tom said this himself. We tweeted out yesterday, so that he'd find it easier to remember his name, because his name was Tom. Whatever. What's the second name?
McBride.
And he was like, "We call you Big Tom now, and I'll know who you are."
There was probably a small Tom on the team as well. This usually happens with these things.
A couple of different Toms.
I mean, we have discussed the best nickname we've heard in the podcast. Is Big Tom better than the Hall of Brady?
No, and no. I also need to talk about the Hall of Brady as well. Actually, I need to bring this up.
Can you hold that for 1 sec? Because I have to bring up something kind of important about Big Tom before we move on. Donnie brought this up in the office yesterday, and it's very important. We've lost Big as a nickname on its own in the GA a little bit. Now, the last one I can really remember is Big Joe Sheridan. And
was he even Big Joe Sheridan?
He was called Big Joe.
Joe Sheridan then.
He did, yeah. But I mean, he wasn't even that big, but he was always, I always heard him called as Big Joe Sheridan. But like, we need a few more bigs in there. Is there any current player that could be big? And I think it has to have a one-syllable first name. Big Joe McNally was a favourite of the 80s and 90s of dub fans. He was always called Big Joe McNally.
Maybe it needs to be a dub. You see, Big Philly sounds class, but I don't think
he's not big enough.
Man is big enough.
Yeah, no, you want to have the one of the prerequisites to being called big something is being big. It's not the only one.
Yeah.
Big Dan Shanahan, of course, as well. Yeah. We had so that's another big.
Big
that's
Brian
gone.
Fenton. Brian Fenton's
average size.
I think
our listeners might be able to help us out here.
Yeah, well, speaking of big people, and this is what I was going to say about Holla.
Yeah.
Holla has been overtaken by the best GA nickname.
Has
been of current players, obviously, what we're talking about here. I only discovered Morris alerted me to it that Damien Comer's nickname in Galway is the Buffalo.
The Buffalo.
Damien the Buffalo Comer.
He forgot to mention it when we were talking about him a couple of weeks ago.
Forgot to mention it when he was eating snack boxes there recently.
Exactly. Morris made his championship debut in Galway when he was like coming out of Moyno or whatever. And in the meeting before it, you know, in the week building up to it, he was putting in his wing back or centre half back or something. And the management went to him, so Morris, you'll be on the Buffalo. And Morris was like, who's the Buffalo? It was Damien Comer.
He's got a ride.
Back in the Buffalo.
Turns out it was probably a guy he probably should have made sure he knew who it was, considering he's one of the best footballers in the country.
It's a perfect nickname for him. Like, he is like a Buffalo.
Damien the Buffalo Comer. Yeah. I'm all in on that.
Yeah,
definitely. I think that might be
better than the Holla, I think. Yeah.
It's undoubtedly better than the Holla.
You never really liked the Holla in the first place, actually.
Overrated.
Okay, come on, bring us more from the South.
I tell you who could end up marking the Buffalo if Parnell somehow managed to get through the Dublin Senior Championship, then the Leinster Championship.
Colin Parkinson.
And then managed to take on Comer in the Club of Ireland. Is Stephen Cluxton. He was playing centre-half-back for Parnell's at the weekend. He was playing centre-half-back for Parnell's in the Dublin Championship against St. Sylvester's. Didn't go all that well. They lost by 13 points. I think it was 19 points to 6.
That's interesting, eh?
But they lost
by 19 points to 6?
Yep.
God, Parnell's gone bad, aren't they?
Parnell's wouldn't be going great now. They wouldn't be.
Too much time in their state-of-the-art clubhouse, I suppose, they're spending, aren't
they? Well, they're also playing the best goalkeeper in the history of the game outfield, which
I don't know, it's really interesting.
As a coaching decision, he's interesting, but a bit nuts, to be honest. Yeah, I'd like to see that. Have we any video evidence?
No, there's just an
Stephen Cluxton is like 36 or 7 as well. This is the Dublin Senior Championship.
Is he that old?
35, anyway.
Yeah, I don't know how old he is. Perhaps he'll address it in his annual interview on the steps of the Hogan Stand. It's the only time we hear from him.
Does he not talk about the league anymore now?
No, I don't think so. No.
What about Leinster?
Maybe the Leinster Championship.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll decamp and leave a dictaphone in the steps of the Hogan Stands for the Leinster final.
He's a big club man, though.
Big Stephen Cluxton.
Big Stephen Cluxton works. But it'll be interesting. Yeah, I'd love to see Big Stephen Cluxton just play one game outfield for Dublin. The crack. Yeah. Go on, let us before you retire. Maybe if they bring
I'm desperate to see that now.
Yeah.
Who have they got in the first round? They've got Longford or Meath.
Yeah.
So they've Wicklow or someone before.
Jesus, okay. You could play with no goalkeeper for him outfield, but 16 men outfield. But anyway, that was interesting. Obviously, a lot of talk about Jeremy Connolly being named in the St. Vincent's starting lineup and then didn't play at all. But that was a Dublin GA championship story that caught my eye. And another one then is obviously the Ulster Championship. This is getting away from the club for a second. The Ulster Championship, they've announced a new restructure yet again. For championship restructuring, they're getting rid of I think it's 2020. In the preliminary round, if you play in the preliminary round of Ulster Championship, then you're exempt from playing in it again for 2 years. Is it 2 years, Max?
Yeah, 2 years.
I should really remember. I'm trying to remember the story off the top of my head.
That's fair enough. It's a good idea. Yeah, this is now tantamount to revolution, in terms of provincial councils, because they're not going to be as wedded from this year on as only playing one game a weekend. Up to now, they've only really allowed one game per weekend throughout the competition. This is why this and the likes of the Connacht Championship takes so bloody long to complete, even though there's very few teams in it. So that, I think, my friends, is the first step in the limiting of the power of the provincial councils.
So you think it's a positive thing? You're happy to see this?
Of course it's a positive thing. It's a nonsense that it takes so long. And they're putting one game on a Sunday afternoon.
Oh, sorry, I'm talking about the preliminary. I'm talking about the preliminary round.
Ah, sorry, yeah, no, that's grand. Yeah, I have no problem with that.
It's a good idea, though. I mean, this idea it's that you have to go in and and especially in Ulster, especially the prides itself on having, you know, 9 competitive teams, even though it rarely does, you know? Like, and you have Donegal might have to play Tyrone in the first round and then go through 3 more matches to win an Ulster Championship. It's too much when, like, we saw last year. Last year, there was such a divide in that. Some lads just had to saunter into the final. I think it was Monaghan. Had to do very little.
Tyrone.
And they had to beat down in the semi-finals, remember? And they didn't even do that. They lost. I remembered it as I went. But,
Roscommon have started off this year and started off last year. More or less guaranteed their appearance in the Connacht final.
Yeah.
The reason I asked, do you think it's a positive thing, is that Cavan are playing Donegal, obviously, in the preliminary round this year. Matty McLeanan has said that there is no logic to the revamp of the
Ulster Senior Football Championship. Matty more than I trust myself, to be honest.
To be fair, though, he said that because he's thought, but why in the name of God are you tweaking this little thing in a system that clearly doesn't work already? And he just wants a complete overhaul. He says, I don't see any sense in it. There's a greater need to look at the structure of the entire championship. Take Roscommon. I love the way that Matty is taking on the beef with Roscommon. He must listen to the podcast. He's going now hell for leather. He's throwing shade at them. He says, take a look at Roscommon, whom we played in Division 2 League final a few weeks ago. We are out in 3 weeks' time, and we could face 4 very intense games to win an Ulster title. Roscommon, they have an extra few weeks preparation, and then they play Leitrim or New York to get to a Connacht final. Win that, and they're in the Super 8s. Tell me how that's fair.
Well, sure. It's obviously not, but this is how it's been. This is life.
But also,
and any changes should be encouraged at all.
But also, it's the provincial councils from the likes of Ulster that are stopping any change happening. So it's Ulster people that are stopping and are making things more difficult for Ulster counties.
Yeah,
like, you know that. Do you think, honestly, the Connacht councillor said, we have to protect the Connacht Championship. We have to make sure that you only have one game to get into a final. I don't know why they're talking like that, but what I'm saying is they're not.
Matty just making that point, I think, overall.
It's having digs at Roscommon again.
It's not Roscommon and Connacht individually. Ulster and Connacht individually have sorted out. It's the GA at a central level. Which is interesting because the CPA also have another survey out, the Club Players Association.
Oh God!
And they're asking, do they need to escalate the methods in which they try to get change in the GAA? He said the GPA one of the questions, the GPA have tested the systems of GAA democracy over the last 18 months, culminating with our transparency motion at Congress. Are you satisfied with the continuation of this process? Or is it time to escalate the situation and go a different route? Which, as I read, sounds extraordinarily like some sort of military coup. We've tried democracy. That doesn't work. Should we escalate the situation and go a different route?
I assume they're talking about strike action, which is very serious, actually.
Such a leading question as well. Is it time to escalate the situation or to go a different route and escalate the situation? Not a different route to just say, I'll leave it be or anything, you know?
Well, it will be interesting to see. They have other questions about in the survey about the organisation, club fixtures.
This is the CPA now.
Yeah, the CPA.
Okay.
I think it's going to be interesting if they do escalate it and see how it's received at Croke Park. We'll hear from DG Tom Ryan on this in a few minutes.
We will.
It could be one of them jokes about, of course, that some of the club players could go on strike for 3 months and miss no matches. But what else have we got? Yes, around the so-called club
month. We're flying around the so-called club
month. Yeah, there's a lot of them.
Here.
Our next stop is Meath. And the Meath Junior C Championship. So
this is what we're talking about. We should have led.
We visited this competition last week, didn't we?
No, we were at the Junior Championship. This is the Junior C Championship.
Right.
So Carnaross, their Junior D team.
Listeners, this will be Carnaross of the Carnaross shit tower.
It is Carnaross, the Carnaross.
Mark's staying local again. Like, he just reads the Anglo-Celt and then brings us around the club counties.
The Anglo-Celt doesn't cover me. That's the Meath podcast.
It covers whatever they're called, though, surely.
You've never read the Anglo-Celt in your life. I'm sending you away for the next 2 minutes so I can finish this story for you to go read the Celt, come back to me. Ollie Murphy came out of retirement. Sorry, yeah, the Carnaross Junior D's. Won the Junior D Championship last year with the help of Ollie Murphy. They're now up in the Junior C Championship.
Big Ollie Murphy.
Big Ollie Murphy.
Yeah. absolutely.
42-year-old big Ollie Murphy came off the bench in Karen Ross's Junior C voyage to beat Minolti by a point. And of course, how many points did Ollie Murphy score? A point.
Who?
Ollie Murphy, I don't know if it was the winning point, but it was a crucial point that could have made the difference in the end.
That's a great story. Ollie Murphy signed my right glove at a PlayStation summer camp back when I was about 9 years of age.
He was signing your glove.
Yeah.
So you were some sort of fancy Dan soccer player with a goalkeeper's glove, were you? Now Macassas for Gavin Cooney.
Yeah, more or less. They were Puma. Actually, I do remember this very vividly. Him and Desi Dolan called down to our camp.
Macassas queued up. Are that's kind of cool.
But so many people got people like Desi Dolan to Desi signed me arm. He signed his arm. What? It was weird.
Just wash it off. Yeah. No. Tommy Dowd presented me with 7-a-side medals for under 12s. I have Brian Canavan's or was it Kavanagh? The one-time joint manager of Armagh before Joe Carolan took over. I have his autograph because he was randomly in our national school one day. But speaking of Armagh, actually, our last stop...
David Fitzgerald saved the penalty for me, actually.
What?
Yeah.
What? When?
When David Fitzgerald was when Clare were winning All-Irelands and he was playing, he'd gone around clubs when we were down in Killaloe and he stood in goal for about, honestly, I would say 300 or 400 penalties.
He enjoyed the competitive buzz out of it.
No, didn't even nearly score. I'd say he conceded about 6 of them.
That's incredible. But were all the kids like 10?
Yeah, but sure, he
wasn't letting anyone.
He was blasting them. He wasn't letting them in. Sure, Davey, come on.
But our last stop is in Armagh, where Paul Hertie, speaking of goalkeepers, it's like he knew this was coming, even though he genuinely didn't. Paul Hertie came out of retirement at the weekend to play for Cross McGlen, because their two goalkeepers are injured, and he retired at the end of one of the most prestigious club careers in history at the end of last year, and has come out for 1 week only. So if you missed it, I'm afraid you're not going to see it again, because he said it's only a one-off.
Right, more lads retiring and coming back from retirement is what we need on the so-called club month, I would say. I would have to say that Ollie Murphy, if a player as good as him, if he can still kind of like get up to a jog, is definitely going to be good enough for Junior C level.
Especially that type of player, a corner forward who's wily. What will happen is he will win the ball and he'll immediately win a free, and then he put the free over the bar himself.
Yeah. And he'd hang around. He'd know the place where the ball would bounce. So he'd score an L goal every 3 or 4 games.
I think Cristiano Ronaldo has learned a lot from old corner forwards in the GAA. You know the way Ronaldo, they're analysing an RT before the game last week.
He never Mickey Linton's like,
Peter Canavan coming back on injured in an All Ireland final.
You'll always notice that the 40 something year old corner forwards have a brilliant knack of every time they get the ball, they're in a scoring position, which means that any touch, they're to the ground, they've won a free, and they've a scorable free.
Yeah.
The same way now that every time Ronaldo touches the ball, he's in a scorable position. That little D around the goals, that's not even a D in soccer, but he is one imagined because he's so used to watching.
Let's give him his full title. Big Ronaldo.
A case of daylight robbery. Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful.
This is outrageous.
That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
The decision
that
he has...
disgraceful.
This is all wrong. This is all wrong.
Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
So, Gavin, you were in Croke Park yesterday to welcome our new glorious leader.
I'm inside the tent now, Mick.
Yeah.
This was, by the way, has anyone been in the Cush, the Banish, the main boardroom in Croke Park at the end, the Hogan Stand premium level?
Is this
level?
For those sausage rolls to be sometimes?
I don't know. I've never had a sausage roll in Croke Park, but this is...
It's the glass table. I saw it on the pictures.
No, it's not glass. No, it's a massive wooden table in the shape of, remember the old association logo? It's like a warped triangle with a fella jumping with a hurl and another jumping to catch the ball. It's in the shape of that, and then that logo is in Boston glass in the middle of it.
Wow.
It's a huge, wood panels, red carpets. It's very, very cool. It looks like something from, Mad Men or something.
Did you take any photos of it?
Oh, I took one blurry one,
It sounds a bit elitist for the so-called weaker podcast.
That would be good for our Instagram account.
What's the boardroom like in Glennon Brothers Pierce Park? That's what I want to know.
Spartan. Spartan.
But how did you get on?
Yeah, no, it was great. We met Tom Ryan, the new director general. All of the assembled media were there. So we spent about half an hour answering questions from us hacks. I stepped up to the plate with the second question. I'll be glad. I'm sure you'll be proud to hear. And I did
Did you introduce yourself as Gavin Cooney from Balls City or Gavin Cooney from the so-called Weaker podcast?
I said Gavin from Balls City, actually. But I did put
He's the only Gavin here now anyway, so.
Oh, well, it's more of the fact he didn't introduce... You should have said Gavin Cooney from Ball Study or Gavin from Ball Study, and more importantly, co-presenter on the so-called Weaker podcast.
Mm. Well, we are...
Well,
we did
second,
only,
banana.
Second banana. Second banana.
We did only go to this because Tom Ryan's from Carlow. Anyway, I did put it to him that in the media, immediately after his appointment, a certain... Well, it's fucking Joe Brawley anyway. But he did put it that it was a bleak day for the association and that Tom Ryan is an insider, having served as finance director for the last 7 years. He's an insider without the vision to take the GAA forward. Here's what he said in response.
I think it's probably a little unfair to reach those conclusions before somebody has even started in the position, but it's up to me and it's incumbent upon me to make my mark on the thing while I'm there, Gavin. I am an insider to the extent that I have worked here for the last, whatever it is, 10 or 11 years. But I think that that's not necessarily and shouldn't be presented necessarily as an impediment to either getting things done or to achieving things or to perhaps changing things. I'd like to think that I have a little bit of insight into how the GAA works and how change can be brought about in an organisation that is, I suppose, it is of its nature, it is inherently conservative, but that's not a bad thing. And I have vision to the extent that I think I'm in a good position that I work at both ends of the spectrum, if you like. Like I'm here trying to do my best from 9 to whatever time it tends to be in the evening time in a day job. And I'm also trying to do my best in a small or medium-sized club that faces all of the issues that every club in the association faces in terms of participation, in terms of retaining players, in terms of fixtures. So... look, it's very easy for me to counter any particular argument to the effect that you've posed, but it's not really what I say, it's what I do that's going to count, you know.
Insiders! I'll tell you who. Insiders!
Is that from a thing, or is that...
The media! The field.
Oh, outsiders! Right, okay. Of course. How didn't
Sorry,
I...
Sorry, I jumped into an Eamon Cregan attack on the media there. Sorry, I just... It just came over me.
By the way, Tom Ryan, the point of this obviously was to meet the media, but also put a certain personality across to the media to kind of combat the one that had been peddled by Joe Brawley and among others. And Uachtaráin Cumann Lúthchleas Gael, John Horan,
well played.
I was sitting beside him and introduced him and decided to tell a little vignette of Tom Ryan's true Gael characteristics. He didn't tell it very well. It was... A couple of days ago, just to tell a little short story, and that's how we described it, a short story, of how, well, myself and Tom were having a meeting here a couple of days ago, and he asked for it to be fixed so we could get out to Fox GAA Club to go to a meeting or go to a training session, I'm not sure which. Tom Ryan had to correct him. It was a training session, yeah. But to continue volunteer work in the association. In fairness, like Ryan's... affiliation with the association does seem genuine. He is treasurer at Fox GAA Club, I hope I'm saying that right, in Temple Oak. He's still involved with his own club down in Carlow. And he has been known, apparently, to cover Junior B games for the Carlow Nationalist, just as a break from the desk job.
Yeah. I have to say, I think it's very unfair to like to paint a picture of a guy before he's done anything, when he's just gotten a job, to suggest that like it's, you know, that he's, you know, because he's been involved in finance, that he's just some kind of some accountant or whatever. I think it's unfair that they even feel like they have to kind of point out his bona fides as a GEA man.
Yeah, no,
you know,
I completely
he's been
agree.
Involved with them for a long time. I mean, and also it's not necessarily even a prerequisite of the job. Mm. He just happens to be as well. You know,
there's also the thing of, oh, it's an insider. They were finding an insider. Well, generally, when you're appointing someone to a job, it's good if they have some experience that's relevant to the job. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I know there's the argument that you want someone who's, you know, a businessman or whatever on the outside, but he knows the GAA. Like,
yeah.
You know,
I would also say that I'd have a lot of criticisms over the years for Pádraig Duffy, and I think we all would, but I think there's no... Like, the GAA is a stable organisation that doesn't... You know, Pádraig Duffy definitely did a good job. You know, you disagree with him on a lot of things, but he's a good thing. It's no real harm having a bit of continuity there either. Like, I mean, it's not, at the very least, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah,
it's that thing of he might be absolutely dreadful, but
we don't know yet. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. A couple of other, obviously, the hot topics came up around the table, including a two-tier championship structure. So have a listen to what Tom said of that.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because in hurling, that has kind of, or not a two, it's four, it's going to five, that has kind of been accepted. And people are happy with their place in the hurling pecking order, promotion and relegation and so on, notwithstanding. Football-wise, it just seems to be more problematic. And I think that is probably born out of, you know, any county, however small, might like to think that on a given day they can get a result against one of the big boys, whereas perhaps in hurling, you know, that's more unlikely. I think the shape that the championships eventually take, it mightn't be where we are now. I'd see it very much as an evolution. As I said, we're about to embark on 3 years of trial or experimentation or whatever you call it. And I think at the end of that, we'll probably know where we need to go next in terms of an evolution. I don't think it's the finished article, and I think it's well worth having the debate around the things that John has mentioned.
Players, Division 4 players, a couple of years ago through the Gaelic Players Association said...
Sure, I know. I know that column, and I know, say, even in my own... I can't even remember my own county playing in B football All-Ireland and winning one a long time ago, and it was a big thing when it was won. Then I can remember then thereafter, a few years after that, there was the Tommy Murphy, which, for whatever reason, it didn't really capture people's imagination to the same extent. And I've seen last summer, you know, the impact that even a modest run in the championship in a small county can bring. So I wouldn't dismiss those things for a second. But at the same time, if you look at the league that we've just gone through, and leaving aside weather and all those kind of things, it's been really, really good. And the attraction sometimes of a competition like the league is that every team is going out with a more or less 50-50 chance of beating every other team, which is a structure that we haven't always had in the football championship. So I think it's worth considering. I think it's worth looking at.
So, like, if you listen to the top brass, the GAA, this is going to happen. John Horan said in an interview after he was appointed as president that he hopes there'll be a two-tier championship in 3 years' time when he finishes his term. Pádraig Duffy, in his final report a few months ago, said that essentially we need to tier the football championships, and now Tom Ryan's going to do that. Obviously, this is how these things happen. They're beginning, they started by floating at the top, and then it takes a long, 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 long way to work their way down. As you heard in that interview, he is aware the Division 4 players have voted again, don't really want this, so... it's all kind of wait and see, but moves are afoot at the top, I think, to steer the football championship.
Pretty much any person we've talked about as well, but we're not every single one of them, but an awful lot of them in the lower tiers don't want a tier championship because of the fact that they don't get the coverage or won't get the coverage of the recognition, it'll be an afterthought.
Yeah.
So I think if you actually said, you know, if that survey was, would you be in favour of a two-tier championship with the, you know, guarantee that you'll get the coverage you deserve, then...
Yeah, but how do you guarantee that? That's actually what I was going to ask you straight after that clip is, if having done this podcast now, this is actually a very important topic for us, having done this podcast for the last 3 months or so, I have to say I'm a lot more aware of the fact that, and not just because we talk about League Sunday every week about what they didn't cover in Division 4 or whatever, just in terms of general coverage overall, I'm very, very, very strong advocate for at least a two-tier championship, if not a three-tier championship. But I have to say I'm a lot more aware of the concerns, or I'm a lot more, you know, I'd be a lot more sympathetic of those concerns, having kind of really dug into this for the last three or four months.
Absolutely.
They don't get the coverage, and that's fine for the league, but if you're talking about these guys need to be talked about properly in the early stages of championships, and they are at the moment, and it's hiding to nothing, but at least they have that. I don't know if we can guarantee it. Yeah. You're saying we could offer...
Well, we definitely can, and it's actually going to be worse this year because they've expanded the football championships, they've added 8 games to the football championships, they've added 7 games to the hurling championships with a new round-robin system. But they have done that under the TV agreement with Sky and RTE for the last format of the championship, which is 45 games live. So there's not going to be any commensurate increase in game screen live with the extra games that are being held under the new formats. Mm. So you have to say TV companies aren't going to give up those really high
Super 8 games. Yeah,
the Super 8's definitely be on TV, and as will most of the, you know, high profile games, especially in the early rounds of the Munster Championship. So if they're going to take that from somewhere, that leaves probably a Carlow or a Longford or someone who might have been on TV on the Sunday game for their first Leinster game in May, that might not go ahead now.
So is this some kind of like Machiavellian scheme by the GEA to take away the attention that they have anyway and say, well, lads, well, you're still not going to have any attention, but you could do it in a two-tier championship now?
Yeah, perhaps.
It might be.
There is a thing as well. It was a good point even with us last week when we were talking about the hurling team of the year and some of the stories that we had actually missed throughout the league.
Yeah.
And us specifically looking out for them.
Yeah.
Well, it really is hard to find
them. Yeah.
They're breaking Christy Ring's record. And it's just random little things like that that you'd never see outside of the match report of that county. You know, like you might see that in the Dundalk Democrat or whatever.
You'd wonder, like, you know, I don't want to pat ourselves in the back or anything like here, but at least, you know, I feel that we're doing it in a different way, and I think that other organizations do have to look at that as well, because you can't just treat you know, Carlo or, you know, the London Footballers or anything the same way as you treat Dublin and Mayo, and just like, you know, nobody's going to read it. We have to make sure that we're pointing out the interesting stories and pointing out the work that's been done there, rather than just talking about their, you know, left half forward being a good worker.
Definitely,
you know?
But the media organisations have to realise that you cannot plead with county boards and players to realise that we need to tier the football championships without then looking at your own coverage of how you're going to cover the lower,
bit of introspection,
lower teams. I think so. Anyway, we mentioned the CPA and the fact that they might go on strike. Strike action was not mentioned explicitly at the briefing with Tom Ryan, but he was asked to address the CPA and what he felt the GAA's relationship would be with it, and whether the GAA needed to show more leadership nationally on the issues that the CPA campaign on. And what you're going to hear is basically he struck the same note as has been struck in Congress in the past, that the GAA don't need the CPA to represent the club player, because that is who we are. We don't need that. It was same said with the GPA tens of years ago. Now it's being said with the CPA. He essentially said that what the CPA want is absolutely fine. It's completely reasonable and normal fixtures, but we want the same. Listen up.
What they're seeking to achieve, it's not unreasonable. And I think everybody in the room would like us to get to that stage, that we'd have a decent fixture programme mapped out in advance for people. The difficulty is in the how bit of how you go about doing that, because there are all manner of local complexities attaching to fixtures, born out of just the different shape and size of different counties. So, it is really very, very difficult for us here in Croke Park to ordained to Leitrim versus Cork, you know, what their fixture programme should be, and to monitor and measure that. And I mentioned it to somebody else a few minutes ago about the structures of the GAA, and it is built from the ground up, and that does entail a significant amount of local authority and local control. So I think the job in delivering that, the objectives of the CPA will be in trying to harness locally county committees and making sure that the fixture programmes that are controlled locally and derived locally fulfil broadly what all club players want and the whole association wants, not just the CPA. But I don't see a huge misalignment.
So, as you can hear, Tom Ryan there admits that sorting out the fixtures in these 32 different fixture fiefdoms of county championships is going to be next to impossible from a central level. So you have to start appealing to local county boards.
So we talked about last week.
Yep.
It's going to be really, really, really difficult to do it, because some are dual counties, some are big counties, some are small counties. Mm. I don't know. It's very confusing.
It's impossible.
Sorry,
man, we've all tried to solve these problems, and the true crucible of problem solving is on a bar stool and find the problems at the bottom of a pint glass, and it can't be done.
Any more?
One more. Tom Ryan was he wasn't really too sure about anything, but one thing he definitely ruled out in his tenure is the idea of counties amalgamating.
See that? I don't see. That is one of the cornerstones of the thing. And I just speaking personally, I don't see the attraction for somebody from a small county looking at a team that they're perhaps only making up a small constituent part of. Your own team is your own county is your own county. And I think if we ever got to that stage, Colin, we'd have a very different GAA, and it wouldn't have the same appeal to any of you around the table or to me.
Unlucky Mark, we know Cavan or Scammon amalgamation under Tom Ryan's watch.
Ah, Christ. Ah, no. I'm so looking forward to it.
I thought it was going to be the Cavan Monaghan Donegal Freesiders.
Do you know the way, if the GAA go to do this as well, like, rather than, like, you can't do anything just flat out. You can't go, oh, we're bringing in amalgamations and that's that. Everything has to start to be brought in step by step, you know, incrementally, slowly but surely. So the first thing they're going to do when they do start, and this will be the warning signs,
even though we've just been told introduce, they won't.
They'll introduce, no, we're further down the line, they'll introduce an All-Ireland Tag Team Championships.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You're not fully amalgamated, but it'll be like the Cavan Monaghan Tag Team Champions against the Longford Westmeath team.
That sounds fucking brilliant.
It actually does.
I mean, tag really team. Does. As in, and like, one team plays and then a whole other team comes on.
No, they are.
It's amalgamation, all but in name. All but in name. Maybe it's 30 against 30. I don't know.
No, but it's have the All Ireland as it is, and then have your tag team championship. So some teams are, some counties are tag team specialists. So okay. They go into the original one, but they're only kind of half arsing it. So Longford are knocked out the first round. But Longford's season really gets going when they join up with Westmeath and they go into the tag team championship. Actually, but Dublin don't concentrate on that at all. They won't join anyone. They're loners. So Dublin aren't really a factor, you know?
Dublin do a Braun Strowman on it and go out and hire a kid to be their tag team partner.
The Dublin Miners. Dublin Miners.
But like, imagine, actually do it 15 against 15 and you have to
Sorry,
tag.
Dublin will be spit by that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
North and South Dublin finally back together again.
You do it 15 against 15 and you have to tag your equivalent from the other county in. So you can imagine, like, you know, Cavan desperately, the Cavan Monaghan tag team looking for a score. They need one badly, so one of the corner forwards is desperately trying to tag in Conor McManus to run on from the sideline. That'll be class.
How far in the future is this happening? It's kind of
next year, hopefully.
I have to say when you just had it as an idea for a second championship that was amalgamations and just called a tag team, I thought that was funny. Now you're actually doing it as a wrestling match. That's a tag team match. Just like, that's this, you know, you've gone too far.
Sorry, I'll read it back in.
What an evening, what a performance. One of the greatest wins ever by the Rossies. Up to Pier Stadium. Goal went 6-1 on to beat us by 12 points. What happened? The Rossies arrived into town. What did we do? We blew them into Galway Bay.
Right, as promised, I'm delighted to say that we've got Shane Mangan on the line with us. Shane, his Twitter account is called a lecturer and researcher at the Gaelic Games Sports Research Centre and also a performance analyst for London GAA. The Gaelic Games Sports Research Centre sounds like one of the most interesting things I've ever heard of, and we'll definitely talk a little bit about this in just a few minutes. But Shane, thanks for taking the call, first of all. But you're someone that Mark has been talking about getting on the podcast for a long time. But I suppose, just for the rest of us, to give a bit of background, how best would you describe kind of the work you do, both kind of with teams and at the research centre?
Yeah, first of all, thanks very much, lads, for having me on. I suppose what best describes me is a sports scientist. I studied sports science for 4 years, and I've been doing research pretty much since I've finished up doing sports science. So I started off doing a master's by research, and now I'm on a PhD pathway, PIT. But I suppose on a day-to-day basis and week-to-week basis, I work in performance analysis mainly. And so, as you mentioned, my role with London GAA started with London back in November. And I've been working with mainly the football team over there, the senior footballers. I've done bits of work. I started off, I suppose, in about, I think it was 2015 when I started with the Dublin Hurling team. So did an internship with them, and then found my feet for performance analysis. I would have worked with a few different teams then over the last couple of years, and then I got started with London this year. At the moment I'm working with London. I work with the Ballyboden St Enda's football team, and I'm also doing my PhD research with Ballyboden as well.
Performance analysis then, right? So, like, there's going to be a kind of a straightforward answer to what that is. But what is it that we don't really know about performance analysis? Because Mark asked me this yesterday, we mentioned it earlier in the show, and I'm there thinking, like, oh, the GPS measures kind of maybe speed and how much of a distance it covers. But as he points out, that doesn't really even scratch the surface. So what is it that you're bringing to the table there with this?
Yeah. So I suppose performance analysis is sort of different. So the GPS analysis, most teams at an inter-county level will have someone doing performance analysis, which is video analysis pretty much. You know, like the likes of opposition scouting, you'll analyse your own players. You'll do video feedback sessions. So that's the main roles of a performance analyst. Last 3 or 4 years, though, with teams getting in DPS, it sort of depends on the team who you're working with, who is in charge of the GPS. So it could be a strength and conditioning coach who's using it for load monitoring. There might actually be a designated sports scientist. But there are some teams, so 3 or 4 teams who have their performance analyst, which is the traditional video analyst, and they're also in charge of doing the GPS. Those are the sort of people that are looking at linking in the two of them together. Overall, most teams are looking at the two things separately. So they're looking at the video analysis, and then they're looking at the GPS and using GPS mainly as a training load monitoring tool. But there is research being done. There's work being done trying to link the two of them together. So a lot of my work this year for the next 2 years at the PhD is looking at linking in video analysis with GPS analysis, and that's something that we're trialing at Ballyboden this year. Some of the things that you get from the GPS, obviously it measures the speed that you're going at, the distances, so we can calculate how much work a player is doing at a high speed. So in Gaelic football, we call high speed distance greater than 17 kilometres per hour. So that's really above 17 kilometres per hour is where they're working hard. So I started to look at linking in this high speed distance with different things. So say, for example, we look at attacking actions. So what we're seeing at the moment is that players that have more attacking actions in a game will typically have higher speed distance or more high speed distance. So it's just trying to add context to what's already there. The use of GPS for load monitoring in terms of injury prevention is well established, but it's just a matter of trying to use what we already have in a different way, if that makes sense.
Is there, like, I suppose, have you noticed a change in the attitude from some GA managers? We're chatting here, we were talking earlier on about trying to demythicize all this and the attitudes of the likes, you know, we get your Paspalan of paralysis by analysis and all this. Originally GPS thing, it was that thing of you could run 10K in a match, but if you don't touch the ball, what good is it? Now changing that it's kind of a thing that you can, obviously, like with GPS, there's so many different things as well. There's like deceleration, there's other things that can indicate how you're working in a game, the types of movement you're making. And it sounds like you're actually now getting to a point where you're actually able to marry the two together and actually make informed decisions. Is this just in terms of analysis, or can you do it in real time as well?
So I suppose to answer the first part in terms of the perception of it, so it's more so, I think there's an onus on the person who's doing the GPS analysis, so whether it's a sports scientist or performance analyst or whether it's just a volunteer, but they have to add context to the information that they're giving back. So like you say, you know, you can run 10,000 meters, but you won't kick the ball over the bar. So it could be you're trying to educate the coaches. Like a lot of coaches now working at the top level are, you know, they come from a sports science background, they're well read. I'm lucky to work with Kieran Deely, who's, you know, he's a well known sports scientist. So, you know, anything that ideas that I'm bouncing off him, they're easy for him to understand, and he can talk to me in the same sort of language. Now, there is instances, you know, I've come across people before who use, I don't know, like they go over the top using fancy words and having all these equations and stuff like this and trying to tell that to a coach, and the coach mightn't understand what's going on at all. So it's a matter of using simple language if they're not from a sports science background, and explaining things to them in a way that they can understand, that they can use. The second part of your question, I'm just after forgetting what was it.
Now? It was in terms of like the real time usage of these stats and analysis within a game. Like you always, people just assume that once, like we've seen it before, where players are going, that player was playing really well, and then he substituted off, and then they're starting, oh, well, maybe it's just that he's reached his max on the the GPS stats. They can see that he's going to start deteriorating from now on.
So in GEA, it's not really an issue. So there are about three teams in the country over football and hurling that are using GPS live in matches. So the issue with using it live is that it requires beacons on the side of the pitch. So a lot of the pitches you mightn't be allowed to put in objects inside the pitches. Also, the reliability then is questionable when you're looking at it on live. So whatever way the systems work, they work off a different operating system, or something to do with the. I'm not really sure. It's quite hard to get a question off companies themselves, because when we look at the data retrospectively to when we look at it live, there's usually large variations. So from my point of view, I wouldn't use it live. I'm not confident enough in the data and the ability of the GPS at the minute to report accurately live. Now, some teams are using them live, looking back on last year when Colin Boyle was taken off, and they were saying that he's taken off because, you know, there's dip in his run and performance, but Mayo weren't using that data live. They didn't have a live feed in that. So that wouldn't have come into question there. But what teams are using live is performance analysis. So teams are collecting data, so technical data, so number of touches on the ball, number of hand passes, shots, tackles, all of that. So that's all data that's been collecting live. And that's more likely to have an impact on whether someone is substituted or not in a match.
Shane, without getting you into trouble with the Ballyboden or the London players that might not play every week, how much do you think that your performance analysis, both by the data and the video, comes into team selection?
So just as an overall, I suppose what it gives coaches is a sort of an objective tool. So it takes away some of the subjectivity. Like, you know, you can... Coaches will try and, you know, they might try and twist information to suit the message that they want to get across the players. But there are instances where you see that someone isn't working hard enough and the coach sees that data afterwards. But the important thing is that if you're adding the context, then, you know, if you're, say, for example, okay, so we play a match and the average distance across the team, the average distance that your team runs in the match is lower than usual, but you end up winning the match by 10 points. So it's most likely that your players have eased off. They don't have to work as hard. So there's this sort of a contextual factor affecting it. So it's a matter of the performance analyst or GPS analyst giving that context in the reports, because you don't want to be given information back saying, okay, player X, they didn't touch the ball as much, or they didn't run as much in this game. And maybe it's because some other contextual factor happened. Okay, so maybe they were man marking someone else. Maybe they were making different sorts of runs in that game. They had a different role. So you have to be sure of what you're telling the coaches. You have to be accurate with that, because you don't want someone missing out because you've reported something in a wrong manner.
What's the most exciting thing at the moment you've seen in the development of training techniques and of video analysis and the like, Shane, that you're seeing that has come into the GA in recent years? I mean, the GPS thing is just, it's one we always talk about because it's so evident on the pitch when you see the players and the GPS bras and whatnot, or if sometimes maybe you might see a GPS flying through the air at someone about to take a free kick. But in general, what are the other things behind the scenes that really excite you?
I suppose just in general, the practices of training and performing and getting ready to perform for matches is improving. Like, you know, obviously back through the year, teams would have done laps of training. They would have done very high distances. They would have done a lot of work, a lot of fitness work without the ball. But what's encouraging for me really is that teams are moving more to small-sided games. So pitches with smaller amount of players on a smaller pitch. And that's really like a game-based model where most teams in a variety of sports are moving to. So like players will enjoy small-sided games more, but also you're getting the technical elements of it into it. You're getting on the ball, but importantly, for my point of view, is that you can have these small-sided games that can replicate the demands of a match. So now that we know the demands of a match, we can pretty much plan every training game to replicate the demands that you're going to face in a match. So you can, you know, if I have a pitch that's 60 by 20 meters long and a certain specific set of rules, I know that that's going to replicate the match play demands. So if I stretch that pitch maybe to 80 meters by 20 meters, that's going to go to about 120% of the match demand. So, you know, you're going over the match demand, so it's going to be more difficult on the players, but then they'll be more prepared for a match. So I suppose it's just smarter methods of training, really. There's no team doing anything magic at the minute. There's no special devices that teams are using.
I suppose it's just about getting
good people in.
Yeah, exactly. We've talked before about, like, you know, sometimes when you're at training sessions, the manager might be there, which, you know, well, the first person runs to the fourth cone and the second person runs to the fifth cone and he passes to the lad at the third cone. They just make it maybe sometimes overly complicated, unnecessarily. And we talk about the video analysis and stats analysis and all that. Some of that is actually not to just make decisions on players and tactics. It's actually just to inform the drills and to make the sense of that, when, like you're saying, that literally the size of the pitch into the different types of meters or whatever will actually have a stat behind it, like you're saying, like it's 120% of demands or whatever that would be in the game.
Exactly, yeah. So it's just like with the tools, we can provide that information to the coaches and then they can, you know, if we can get, say, for example, okay, so in a match, you might run 120 meters per minute. So if we can design a training game that can be maybe 4 minutes long, 6 minutes long, and you can get that 120 meters per minute, and that means that you have more time spending playing football rather than if you want to do some set of conditioning training and you're going to have to do it without the ball, you know, so it's making teams be more time efficient, really. That's a big benefit to it.
We look at, obviously, the focus on the weaker counties or the so-called weaker counties on this podcast.
Yeah.
And so I was just wondering, do you think there's any gains to be made from this kind of stuff for the weaker counties in terms of closing the gap? Or the other way that I'd be fearful of, like, is this something that's expensive and the more you have, the more you'll be able to get out of it, if you know what I mean? So, like, the Dublins of the world will always have an advantage.
Yeah, so I suppose, from one element, like, I suppose I'll take the video analysis first of all. So, with London, I'm working remotely here, so they have that benefit that they can, you know, you don't have to be there for every day. You don't have to be at the pitch for every training session or for every match to sort of have an impact on that. So, you can. Video analysis is relatively cheap to do. You know, you buy a camera, and then if you have the software like I do, or you can, you know, there's free software that teams can use. So a lot of club teams would use free software to code their matches or to split up their matches. That's relatively inexpensive. Like, I know to date, London don't have GPS systems. They're potentially getting them, but there'll be another few, mostly some of the weaker hurling counties wouldn't have GPS, but there's other methods around it. So we can estimate the training load by asking players. So there's a scale called the RPE scale. So players will rate the session from a scale of 1 to 10 on how hard they think the session was. So using this information, so say, for example, if it's 6 out of 10 that they give, and you multiply that number by the number of minutes in the training session, and then that'll give you like a training load for that session. So you can monitor that across the season and between players, and essentially that'll give you the same sort of information that GPS would in terms of training load. But as well with the research that's been done in GEA, that there's more and more information that's out there now for teams. So like we've done some work here in small side games in hurling. There's data there available on these small side games, so people know how much distance players will run in a specific pitch size, or when there's a specific number of players playing in the match. So other teams that don't have these tools then can use that information in their training session. So at least they'll have an estimation of what they're doing, that they don't actually require the tools to do it.
Just before we let you go then, the Gaelic Games Sports Centre just sounds like somewhere, I don't know, I want to work, or that it's like incredible that there is somewhere like this. So tell us more about it.
It sounds like there's loads of, just like, you know, I'm imagining those things where you've got like a random GA player is just running around in some sort of, oh, we put him in some sort of suit there, he's just doing press-ups all day. It's just as you're walking or up the corridor.
Like, you walk past, it's just like Jaff Allen kicking points outside, you know, as people take notes beside
with lasers flying everywhere.
That sounds ideal, alright. The Gaelic Sports Research Centre, we're based out of IT Talla in Dublin. It's been around for about 3 or 4 years, set up by Kieran Collins. So Kieran has been involved with Cork Footballers and Hurlers for a number of years as a sports scientist. But basically, it's sort of a research hub, really, for GEA. So at the moment, there's about 5 or 6 of us that are postgraduate students doing research. So we have 2 guys that are working with Longford GEA, and this guy working with Offaly. There's a few more that are working with a number of different teams and conducting their research with them. But basically we have collaborations with other colleges then. So we've done a lot of research with CIT in the last year. So that's where I'm actually transferring to do my PhD now, is with CIT and Keane O'Neill and Con Burns are down there. But as well, we'd have links with Blanchardstown IT, Setanta College. It's essentially a collaborative sort of approach. So say, for example, I'm doing my research in Gaelic football, looking at training demands and match demands, and the good thing is that I can bounce off ideas to lads that are working in Longford or in Offaly, and they can get feedback, you know, on the techniques I'm using, or they can bounce ideas off you. So it's just good in that sort of sense. You know, you get an idea of what other teams are doing, they get an idea of what you're doing, but at the same time, you're not giving them away the information, obviously. It's positive. I think in the last 3 years, we've had 40 publications in academic journals. That's extremely high in that sort of sense for a research group. We've just got our first funded student in there a couple of months ago, so that's good, whereas we would have been self-funded before. So it's good that there's some funding coming into it. It makes it easier for the student, and it can improve their quality of research. We're trying to share the information with people as we get it. You know, it's a long process if you're doing research. So say, for example, the research I'm doing at the minute, I'll be collecting the data for the guts of 9 or 10 months. You know, there's a process where you have to write up that write up the information about that data in a specific format. It has to go through a peer review process. It takes a number of months. It might get sent back to you. You have to send it back again. So it's a long process. But the thing is, when it is published, then we can share that data to whoever wants it, really. Like, yeah, it'll be anonymous data, but it's there for everyone to read, and it's freely available online. So I suppose where we can probably improve is sort of relaying that information to the general public. So the format that researchers would publish in is quite scientific orientated. So I suppose the onus is on us to make that relatable to the general public and to coaches especially.
Yeah, put it into layman's language. Isn't that all sounds fascinating? I'm a little bit disappointed there's no Kieran McGeaney pig going around the place. I don't know, I've kind of messed up the joke a little bit.
Not as of yet.
Now, you would have to call any guinea pig you have Kieran, though, surely. Kieran Ma. Anyway, listen, Shane Mangan, thanks so much for taking the call, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Thanks very much, lads. All right, I'll do it.
The impression of the game, you get all with what you put into. It's like a walk of life. If you're good enough, go out and get it, no more about it. Your mother sends you down to the shop for a pound's worth of goods, and she gives you 50 pence. You can't get the pound's worth of goods, can you?
That was Shane Mangan. Very interesting character. Someone I think we might catch up with again, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's so much going on. Like, it was even the thing where I was chatting to Shane a couple of weeks ago about coming on to the show, and I was like, I can't let you on yet because there's too much to talk about. We need to kind of narrow it down. Like, there's so much there. We're really only at the cusp of, at the start of what we can learn from GA in terms of analysis and things that you wouldn't even realise compared to other sports and whatnot. So
yeah, definitely. Just before we go, really quickly, the AIB Club Hurling Team of the Year was announced today or yesterday. And last week we went through our selection, as we mentioned at the time. Ball's one of the many media organisations. We all submitted our 15. They were all kind of put together into some sort of hopper and out came an actual team. We had 6 of the 15 in our team last year.
Last week
for the football team. Now for the hurling team, we have, guess how many?
15?
6.
6? 6 again. And so we start off pretty badly because the goalkeeper, Sean Brennan of Coola, we didn't have him. We had the slot Neil goalkeeper, Russian Authority. Oh, I tell a lie. 7. Michael Casey in a piercing, yep. Number 2. We had him. We didn't have Keane O'Callaghan, Con's brother. We didn't have Alan Dempsey of Napiershig, Cottle King of Napiershig. We obviously had Sean Moran of Coola, who's probably going to win Hurler of the Year. And we had Paddy Maher of Thurles over Philip Mahoney of Ballygunner, 2 county players there that you know that neither of them won a provincial title at club this year. But Darrell Connell and Ronan Lynch, or Darrell Connell in midfield from Coola, we didn't have him. So we were going badly up until then, but we did have Ronan Lynch of Napiershig. We had David Tracy of Coola. We had Brendan Rogers of Slotneil. We had Kevin Downs of Napiershig. We had Adrian Morrissey of Lee Mellows, and we had Conor Callaghan of Coola. The only forward we didn't have was Adrian Breen of the Piershig, which when I seen his name there, I thought, what the fuck were we doing not picking Adrian Breen?
I
actually, one of the players I remember most from the club championship.
The best hurler in the country, Conor Callaghan.
Yeah, absolutely. Who is also one of the nominees for Club Hurler of the Year.
He actually genuinely could end up being the best.
Yeah.
Officially the best hurler in the country.
So, I have to say, once we got to the second midfielder there, we did pretty well, didn't we?
Yeah,
so,
standing, yeah. Fair play to us.
Karen McCaig is in that team in our hearts.
He is. He wasn't picked in either actual team. But
he's in that team in Morris's heart. Morris was so determined to get Karen McCaig into a team of the year that he put him in the league team of the year.
Yeah, even though he only played one league game. Yeah. When Derry were relegated from Division 2. So that's it from teams of the year, at least for this part of the year. We'll come back to it in 6 months or so when we do the county stuff. But 2 more weeks of so-called club month to come.
I'm excited. I might even make it to training. I haven't made it yet for a so-called club month. It's been a disaster for me personally.
Okay, so we'll be back next week with God only knows what to talk about. But until then, take it easy.
Oh, we're going out the same way we came in. Don't matter who you know. he'd rode your superstar. You won't act the same way you came in. You're born into this world without a thing. I believe it, just as naked as we came. Came a drive, a coupe de ville, on a mansion on the hill. Don't mean nothing when St. Peter calls your name. Oh, you're going out the same way you came in. Someone will load a fire next to kin. Some will weep and some will moan. Some will spit upon your stone. But you're going out the same way you came in. Your fancy clothes, and they'll figure out just who and what you own. Then the lawyers lay in their nest, and your kinfolk gets the rest. But you can't take it with you when you go. Oh, you're going out the same way you came in. Makes no difference who you know or where you've been. Makes no difference who you are, Skid Row Joe or superstar. You're going out the same way you came in. Oh, you're going out the same way you came in. Makes no difference who you know or where you've been. Makes no difference who you are, Skid Row Joe or superstar. You're going out the same way you came in.